Now, for the mental health side, I guess we'll open up a little bit about me then. Well, I've had to know four of my friends who have committed suicide. I lost a friend to a sudden sickness, which no one has still told me what the hell happened to him. And then I had to respond to an emergency call where some 18-year-old girl hung herself in the barracks, and then her mom called the watchstanding phone and blew me up a million times, and then just, you know, tell me, like, why didn't you respond faster? Why didn't you do this? And she blamed me for her daughter's death. And that's shit I still, like, think about quite frequently, but at the same time, like, I'm not the dude in the car, you know, fucking trying to respond. And then at the same time, like, where was her roommate? Or where was her command?
Welcome to Your Story Doesn't End Here, the mental health podcast of military and veterans who refuse to be silenced. I'm your host, Rachel, and my mission with this podcast is to be a voice for those who don't have a voice, bring awareness to mental health issues, provide value and solutions, and to change the culture when it comes to mental health within the DoD organizations.
Hey, everyone. Thanks so much for coming back for another episode of Your Story Doesn't End Here. Today, we have guest Jordan Nelson. Jordan and I actually served together two different commands when I was in the Navy. We are both veterans now. He is on a different side of the U.S., and he is going to school for criminology. He spent 4.5 years in the Navy and just an incredible human being. So, Jordan, I'm so excited to have you on the show today. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me, man. And I appreciate the compliment, bro.
Absolutely. So I am going to pass it off to you to share your story. I obviously know the bits and pieces that I know from just serving alongside you, but I don't think I've ever heard your entire story. So I'm going to give you the spotlight.
All right. Well, I went to boot camp in December of 2017, graduated, obviously. Then I went to Meridian, Mississippi, where I learned how to be a computer junkie. And then I think April 28th, 2018, I got to Oak Harbor, Washington to be stationed at VQ-1. Then was there for, I think, roughly 2.5 years, did one deployment to, well, detachment to Okinawa from, say, was it January 2019 to May 2019? When I was out there, I herniated a disc in my back, which obviously got me to LIMDU, which is where we also met again. And then I stayed there for another 2.5 years and did a lot of TAD stuff in the middle.
Hell yeah. Awesome. Yeah. For some reason, I thought that you were at VQ-1 longer than that, but no, I guess not. I don't know. When you hear like the outside looking in story of military service, it just sounds so much more like simple. But when I remember like living through it, and it just seemed like the longest. I was in 6.5 years. So it seemed like the longest 6.5 years of my entire life. So really? Yeah,
they flew by for me.
Really?
Yeah, dude, it went by so fast. Like, say the last 6 months really dragged, but when you know you're getting out and you're just stuck.
Yeah.
I think that's when it gets a little long, because for the longest time, I wasn't trying to be med-sept. Like, I was getting, like, steroid injections. I tried to get stem cell injections as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, you know what? I'm not going to. Like, I fought too hard to get in, which is another thing we'll talk about later, but so why am I trying so hard to get out of it when you have like one bad experience?
Right.
So, but then eventually it just got like to the point of where it's not going to get better. Well, unless you have a fusion, and I'm really trying to push that off as long as humanly possible.
Yeah. So I remember that you went through all kinds of struggles in LIMDU with your medical issues that you're having. And on the VA side, are you getting the help that you need for that? Or have you found that to be a bit of a struggle?
I haven't found it to be a struggle, because it's the same thing as like, you know, Navy medical, right? Like, You are your best, advocate. So if you're just going to go in once and just say, okay, well, he said no, then it's the same concept. You got to break the door down.
Right.
And sometimes that annoys people. And to be frank, I don't care. So, but, you know, I've been fine, though. I mean, I usually just go stop in, get what I need, and I'm gone.
Awesome. I need to be better about going to the VA. I really haven't done it at all since I've been out. But
really, man?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a whole story.
Good time. But you see a bunch of 90-year-old dudes on their walkers just strolling in.
Yeah. All the NAM vets. I get it. So you said you fought hard to get into the Navy. I want to hear more about that.
Because I had a speech impediment, and for some reason, my recruiter said it was a lot worse, so they wouldn't let me in. So then I had to go from branch to branch to branch to get in. So the Navy was the only one that said they would allow me, but I had to send a 20-minute audio recording of me talking to a recruiter.
Wow.
And send it to the captain of the entire naval recruiting.
Wow.
I'm not sure if he listened to the whole 20 minutes, probably about like 10 seconds, and said, oh, fuck it. But yeah, man.
Wow. So did you initially want to join the Navy, or were you wanting, what branch were you looking at?
I was looking at the Army.
Okay.
Which, now hindsight, I made a great decision, dude, because that would have sucked.
Listen, we all get paid the same. It's how much work you want to do. I'll tell you one of the reasons why I picked the Navy over all the other branches is I looked at how far you had to run for each branch.
Really?
And I was like, don't want to run 3 miles, don't want to run 2 miles. Oh, the least is a mile and a half in the Navy. Let's do it.
Yeah. Well, here's my problem is in my early 20s, dude, I was a fucking meathead. So, like, I was like, oh, fine. Like, I'll be special forces. No problem, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I was all about that life.
Yeah. 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 I think a lot of guys think that.
Until reality hits.
Yeah. It's all that special forces shit's mental. I actually tried going spec war when I first joined the Navy. I was trying to go air rescue. I had everything down except for the run. Running has never been my strong suit. So everything down except for the run, but I was also the only female in the entire state of Iowa that was trying to go for any spec war thing. So, and all the guys were like, oh, I'm going to be a SEAL. Like, everyone thought they're going to be a SEAL.
And then they come out with zero transferable skills except for CrossFit videos.
Yeah. I think one guy actually made it through buds out of that entire group of guys. And he was the skinny, scrawny guy that, you know, he was a runner. He was very good at it. You know,
somebody told me that the majority of those guys are the ones that make it. And the big ass meathead dudes usually don't.
Oh, yeah. It's all mental.
But, you know, I don't know that for a fact. But
yeah.
It's just,
yeah. No, I've heard the same thing. And but no, training for that stuff was a really good experience. I definitely don't regret that. It set me up really well for boot camp. So I want to get talking about mindset. I know you want to keep this on the lighter side, but when we were in together, there was a lot of things that you were extremely disgruntled about. And so I want to talk a little bit about that and what changed for you when you got out of the military, as far as like mindset goes and how you felt about your service.
Well, I wouldn't say I was disgruntled. I would say that I don't like when there's gray area with situations. So that would be my biggest thing, is especially at our first command together, is I would hear, you know, like a multitude of different stories, and I never knew who was telling the truth to me.
Yeah.
So that was the hardest part, is like, I know I'm fucked up. Like, I know I'm broken. So who's telling me the truth of what needs to happen, or, you know, just general stuff like that. I am trying to keep this a little bit on the lighter side, because like, I don't really hold any negativity.
Yeah.
Or is it because at the end of the day, it's the damn military and your government asset.
Yeah.
So they paid, I think on average, $50,000 $1,000 for you. And if you're broken, then I get that to a point.
Yeah.
But we'll just talk about mindset in the way that I viewed it. I still viewed it generally the same. I'm here to do a job and I'm going to do it to the best of my ability. And I carried that with Limdu and when I was at the skiff too. And I still am the same way generally today.
That's awesome. So what challenges did you face with your medical care and trying to get from your operational command?
This could take 2 hours.
I know. The best summary you can give us. And I think it's important to talk about because there are people that they experience horrific things with their bodies when they're in, right? Mm-hmm. And a lot of people just don't know what direction to go. They don't know what to experience. So I think it's good.
I got sent about 20 different ways. So when I went to Japan and I injured my spine, we thought I had torn my lat. And then that clearly didn't happen because there was no bruising or black, you know, stuff. I still had motion. And then I went to the doctor there and he was like, no, you tore your calf. And I'm like, what the hell are you talking about, dude? So what? I'm trying to tell this to my former chief, you know, via text, and we're 17 hours ahead of them. So she's probably like, what the hell is this dude talking about?
How did you get injured in the first place?
Dude, I have no idea.
Oh, really?
No, like one day I was good. The next day, like my entire back was just spasming out of control.
Oh, wow. So it wasn't like you were lifting something and all of a sudden something popped.
Dude, I have no badass war story. It's the most
boring. Man, you got to make something up.
No. I think it's better to have an anticlimactic story.
But anyway, so you're texting your chief back home and telling your chief what happened.
And she was like, probably like, what the hell is this guy talking about? It's going from lat to calf to hip to, but that's how nerves work though, right? So like if like one's pinched, it's going to send pain receptors to a different part of your body. So you don't really know what's going on. But the longer I had the injury and the more isolated it got, the more I was like, okay, well, this is clearly a back problem. So after 3 flight docs and 1 IG report, we'll just leave that at that. I got to a flight doc that was able to help me, which then in turn opened a new can of worms because they've, you know, this whole time they've wanted me to redeploy. And I'm like, no. Something seriously wrong. And then, you know, when there's a lack of answer, or as I say, gray area, like we were talking about earlier, well, suspicions are going to start to arise regardless. So basically, you know, they were starting to get suspicious that I was aching it, or, you know, just trying to stay stateside, which why the hell would anybody want that, especially at BQ1 where you're paid bank, dude, to go stay at a Marriott hotel.
Unless you're going to Bahrain.
Well, still, regardless.
Yeah,
so,
yeah,
like,
I get
in my mind, I'm like, why the hell would I want to stay here? I was a huge fan of Japan. I was fighting to stay for 6 months while being fucked up. I didn't want to come home. So regardless, I get some MRIs and a CAT scan done, and it shows that I have a herniated L5 S1 disc, which for people that don't know is like about an inch above your butt crack. That's a good point of reference there. So then I had to fight for surgery because my former chief was like, okay, well, this is elective, so you can still deploy.
That's like, elective.
Yeah, I know.
Really?
I was like, oh, spinal surgery is elective, huh? I thought those were boob.
Are you going like the BBL while you're getting your spine done?
That's what I was saying. So I actually had to get my flight doc involved with the CO directly to get my surgery approved. And then after that is when all the town foolery began, where like I'd have my shift changed like 5 days in a week, like so like I'd work mids, days, and nights. So actually, leading up to my spine surgery, I had 4 hours of sleep because they put me on nights.
Wow.
Well, it's a gang world, right?
Yep. Yeah. I mean, I it's relatable, obviously, because I've lived the life where people, I don't know if they're, I would like to think that they're not retaliating on purpose. I would like to think that. But I also, from a realistic standpoint, I think there are people that do. And I know there are people that do, because I worked in a work center where I saw the conversations where people were like, oh, so and so, blah, blah, blah. And then they're like, oh, we're just going to send them to Line Shack, or, you know, we don't like so and so. Let's throw them on nights. So
I knew something was wrong when a desk chief told me to watch my back. And then they started collecting like medical paperwork on me that didn't involve my Divo folder.
Yeah.
So I had a suspicion that they were building a book against me, which this is about as negative as we're going to go, by the way.
Yeah.
But it is what it is, man. Like, you learn through bad leadership, and then you learn from good.
Right. And I hope that the leaders that, you know, mistreated someone back in the day, because I think we all as leaders fucked up somewhere, right? Like, even as an E4 or an E5, like there were times where I should have stood up for someone and I didn't, or maybe I took part in a conversation that I shouldn't have, or I said something that I shouldn't have. I mean, none of us are perfect. And so
I still think about like random moments of me giving bad advice like daily.
Yeah. 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 I mean, I hope that those leaders that steered you in the wrong direction or second guessed you, I hope that they took that as a lesson and were like, oh shit, this guy wasn't lying. I'll do better next time. And that's all we can really hope for. Right. And and that's why I say it's important to talk about these things, not to be negative and be like, oh, fuck that leader, they're a bad person. But to say like, hey, we all make mistakes. And yes, there are people that do malinger. It happens all the time. But this is the issue we have when it comes to these invisible illnesses, whether we're talking mental health or something internal in your body that you can't
and
physically
just imagine, right? So we're talking about, this podcast is mainly about mental health.
Mm-hmm.
So imagine that kind of pressure of coming into work every day, knowing that they're collecting stuff on you, and every word you say can be used against you.
Right.
And they're just waiting for you to make a mistake. Yeah. It sucked.
Yeah. And how much pain were you in this process? Did anyone give you
terrible daily?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm like a million times better now, but my God, it was, I couldn't bend over, couldn't walk normally. I gained like 40 pounds, dude. So going from, like we said, a total meathead to, you know, the dad bod 3000 was also kind of humiliating too. And it takes a mental toll on you as well.
Now, from a PRT standpoint, were you still expected to do these tests, or did they waive you from them?
They waived me every time. I haven't taken a PRT since 2018, dude.
Wow. Yeah, I
think I could pass right now, though.
Yeah? Yeah. I mean, they changed everything. It's what
I'd have to speed
planks now.
I mean, I'd have to put on the high socks and speed walk it, but, you know.
But, you know, I think when we talk about like medical gaslighting, I think this is something that's very relatable for a lot of people in the military, because this happens a lot of times. And when you talk about an asset, right, like every member of the military is an asset. Every time you go to the medical side for the military, yes, they're supposed to be helping you, help make you feel better, but they're also still working for the military. And so they're going to do everything possible to get you
back good, on the field.
Yeah. Good enough to go back to work. And I think when I talk about in previous episodes, like the adjustment disorder that a lot of people get diagnosed with instead of PTSD or anxiety or depression, that's the good enough.
Going through there right now.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, when I went to the VA after I got out, and I was getting my disability rating stuff figured out, they gave me a PTSD diagnosis. And I'm like, man, how validating would it have been for me to be active duty and know that the way I feel matches what they're putting on the paper instead of them just saying, oh, it's an adjustment disorder. Cause it's not like I had an issue adjusting. It was
right now. And granted, I'm not going to delve into my own personal stuff very much, but it's a pain in the ass, dude.
Yeah.
Especially when you have like the harder rating where it's like, okay, well, he has this.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, no. I mean, yes, transition from military to civilian is difficult.
Yeah.
That's not the cause of like me dreaming of my dead friends. Like,
right. Once a week. Right.
You know, like, there's no correlation there, pal.
Right. Right. I know. It's so hard. And it's, I think what a lot of us in the mental health space are still fighting for is like, it shouldn't be so incredibly hard to get A, validation, and then B, to get the help that we need when we're dealing with these things.
Well, and then for me, it's not even about the validation. It's just, I just want the help because I just don't want to be experiencing this anymore. Like,
right. Right.
And that's what I think, like, some people, I don't want to say misinterpret, but like in an ideal world, like, who wants to be fucked up?
Right.
Like, it's not a great thing.
Right.
It's not pleasant.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I've talked to people all the time. There's a lot of people that are in the older veteran generation who are like, oh, people are told to just go in and say they have PTSD to get that rating. And I'm like, A, I was never told that. Okay. I didn't actually take TAPS in person. I took the JKO version of TAPS and I just clicked through that shit. I did not pay attention to a single thing. Could not tell you anything about TAPS. But I do know that there are people that are telling me that apparently back in the day in TAPS, there were people advising people to go to the VA and just like claim they had PTSD. I did have a first class from VQ. I won't say his name, but he did tell me when I was still in to try to get the PTSD diagnosis. And I was like, well, that's fucked up because there are people, I didn't know I had PTSD. I was like, well, that's fucked up because there are people out there that are actually like struggling with PTSD. And how fucked up would it be if I go in and I claim something that I don't have just to get a rating?
Yep.
When I'm not struggling with this. And so,
and I'm very weird about that too. It's like, I don't know, because like I've heard the same stories that you have where they're like, oh, just go to the VA thing, they'll hook you up. It's like, but maybe I don't want to be hooked up.
Right.
Like, you know, I would rather just want like my white picket fence, you know, life and just be fucking normal.
Right.
But here we are.
Yep. I know. Yeah. What I've realized is that like, and I talked about this the other day on another episode, is that we changed so much in the military. And I don't think I resisted realizing that I had changed when I got out. To me, I was like, oh, I'm the same person. And, there's nothing different about me. And then it took me probably a solid year or so to realize that like, I'm not the same person that, because obviously when I joined the military, I was 22 years old. When I left 6.5 years later, I mean, just a person, you're going to grow anyway in a period of time over a certain amount of years, but the experiences that we go through, the way we train ourselves to handle certain situations. I mean, there's obviously positives and there's negatives, but we learn and we grow from all of them and we're not the same person. So, I think it's important to talk about that, but I do want to talk about the transition process and how that went for you, because I hear from a lot of veterans that when they leave the military, that there's kind of like this lull period where they don't do anything. Like they're just kind of like decompressing. Dude,
sorry to interrupt you. That
you're good.
It happened to me, bro.
Yep.
I was I would say about from November of 2021 till about like March of 2022, I just like flamed out to begin with, like just had just pure burnout.
Yeah.
So when the time came where I actually like was no longer in, dude, I totally became like a vegetable.
Yep.
For like a solid 2 weeks.
Yep. Same.
Yeah. And then you start to think about, right, like, what am I going to do next? Because I had this grand plan, right, that never happened, by the way. I'll just say that on here, but you know, so I guess my thing was, is I should have had a better, more realistic plan, because my plan was is just to be a security manager at a SCIF.
Yeah.
But then when you think about how many jobs there actually is for that, when there's like one guy in charge of it and then there's one deputy and that's it, bro, that's like 100 jobs nationwide.
Right.
So then I moved back to Minnesota in the fall, which, if we're going down this same career path, was a horrible decision because there is no bases here besides a reservist base. So for me, it was another stage of, you talked about how the military changes you, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it's also forced change. So like when you have to readapt to something, or I guess start from scratch and totally recreate yourself again, it's difficult, but it makes you grow because it's forced.
Yeah.
You don't have a choice.
Right.
Especially when you have a family.
Right.
So you got to figure that shit out.
Yeah.
And now here we are.
So was part of your plan to go to school, or was that part of that adaptation?
No, in my mind, the world is too competitive to not have a degree. Because in the military, you're told, oh, you're the greatest shit since sliced bread, right? And then you go to the real world, and there's motherfuckers who have been doing Excel spreadsheets since they were 5 years old.
Yep.
You're on the same, you know, billet as them.
Yeah. Yeah.
So how do you compete against that?
Right.
You have to gain a new skill set.
Right. Yeah, I think it's interesting that when you're in, everyone's like, oh, military service is going to weigh so heavily on your resume, and people are going to just want to hire you because you're in the military. And I think a lot of that's dependent on where you live. Like, I think in the states like Texas, I don't live in Texas, obviously.
I've never been to Texas. So
I hear it's a very military friendly state. So I'm sure if you're in Texas and you have military in your resume, they're like, oh, fuck yeah, like, let's hire this guy.
Yeah.
But in a state like Washington, where like no one really gives a shit that you served in the military.
A trophy, dude.
Yeah, it's just kind of like, oh, it's just another thing. Like, it's good to have on your resume. Yeah. There are skills that come alongside that, but you're not going to have people just knocking at your door trying to hire you.
No, you have to be your best. Like I said earlier, you have to be your best advocate.
Yep. Yeah, exactly.
You love yourself. Like, you know, you can change how you say things you did in the military, right? Yeah. Like, you know, a lot of general admin stuff that we did as E5s transfers to the human resources world actually pretty well.
Absolutely.
Now, granted, we don't use the same systems, but it's all about, you know, just bending it maybe a little, just a smidge.
But even like the life skills, right? Like if we're looking outside of very niche specific things, and we're looking at leadership skills or problem solving skills, or like, I think one thing that really stood out to me when I was going through school is my ability to adapt and learn things very quickly. I was going through nursing school the one quarter that I was in, and I was picking up things like that. Like, people were spending weeks studying things, and I was like, give me like 3 days, I got it.
Yeah,
I'll let you get to that in a second. Yeah, to finish my thought here, you know, the amount of time that we had to learn things at an operational command like VQ1, it was like, take this book, like EAWS, for example, and here you go. You got 2 weeks to learn the whole thing and do a board, and good luck. And it was like looking at things and thinking, holy shit, I'm never going to be able to do that. And then 2 weeks just being able to proficiently perform that task. Like, that's a fucking skill. So, yeah. But anyway, so your story, go ahead.
Yeah, so I had a forensics class this past semester, and there was a test, and for some reason, I don't know why, I just came in feeling cocky. And I said, you know what, I'll take the test early. I got one question wrong.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
Hell yeah, brother.
Yep. Yep. And it's like, you know, I don't know how many military or vets are in your classes, but none. I was like the odd person out too. in my classes.
Significantly older than the rest of them,
yeah,
too.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah. But I think there's a good thing that comes with that, because when you go to school after you've experienced life a bit, I think it sets you up a little better. You look at it differently than like me coming straight out of high school and treating college like it's high school 2.0. Like I just, when I did that, because I did do that right out of high school, I wasn't as prepared for what college would be. And I didn't put in the amount of effort that I did when I went back to school as an older adult. So I think there's definitely pros to that, especially after military service.
Pros, man. Well, yeah. What do you mean?
Yeah. I mean, other than being the old guy and a bunch of...
Who cares,
But hell yeah. So what's your plan then? What's the next 5 years looking like for you as of right now?
First I got to graduate, and I like to take things one step at a time, because I have a problem where like I get too far in the future.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, this is me fucking awesome. And then you like get like halfway there and you just burned out. So like,
yep.
This past year, I've really tried to like, I don't want to say overhaul my, like the way I think and the way that I do things, but that's really what had to happen.
Yeah.
So I just try and take things a step at a time. So once I finish this degree, and if my GPA holds up, I do want to apply for law school. And if that doesn't work, then I'll have a really good degree in criminology. So my plan B is to work for the FBI. That's what I've wanted to do since I was 9 years old. I'm not sure how that's going to work, because the intelligence analyst position, you still have to go to Quantico and do like the physical test, which I'm like, why? I'm sitting at a desk.
You're right.
So I'm not sure, you know, like there's a whole waiver process probably and all of that stuff. So I have no idea, but we'll just focus on the graduation first.
Yeah. So then medically, you said you're good now. Did you?
Not like bad.
In severe pain every single day, I would hope. Yeah. So you did get the surgery while you're active duty, right?
Yeah.
Did that help?
It helped immensely, but there's still things that I can't do. It's like I've lost a lot of functionality in my hips, which was a result for me not getting surgery for 11 months.
Yeah.
While I was trying to get into the actual surgeon, so that could have been avoided had I have gotten in immediately.
Yeah.
But you know, there's a lot you can do though, as long as you, I don't like, just stay on top of your health.
Yeah.
I guess so. Like I still work out damn near every day now. Granted, it's not the same as me doing like power cleaning and stuff like I used to.
Right.
But you know, like I've gained most of my mobility back. I can't run, but I can still do like a 16-minute mile. Like
that's not bad. Walking.
So, yeah.
But do you have any regrets from your military service?
None. Besides, I just posted that on Facebook a few weeks ago. Damn it.
Yeah.
is I wish I would have got help for my mental health sooner. It would have solved a lot of my own problems that I was dealing with, especially at WMDU, when you're surrounded by a bunch of depressed, angry people five days a week.
Yeah.
So that would have been my one thing, is I wish I would have gone in sooner.
Why didn't you? Did you not realize that you had issues that you needed to deal with? Or was
I knew I was fucked up. I, for some reason, thought I would lose my TS if I did, because some fucking airman told me that when I got to VQ once. I was like, oh, no.
Yeah.
And for some reason, that stuck with me.
Yeah.
And especially when I started working at the SCIF, I was like, oh, this is the greatest job in the world.
Yeah.
I don't want to lose this.
Right.
And then once I went back to WMDU, though, when my SCIF job was done, because I was just a gap billet, it really slowed down. And then once you start to like really take in like what you've been through, I guess that's when shit hit the fan for me.
Yeah.
And I remember talking to Chief about this, because he goes to mental health. I'm not gonna blast his name out here, but he was somebody I really looked up to was there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
But by the time he had told me that, it was January 2022 and I had 2 months left in, and they had an intake line of 2 months.
Yeah.
So I was like, you know, shit out of luck.
Yeah.
So that would have been my one regret, besides, you know, like not breaking my back would have been cool too, I guess.
Yeah, if only I had control over that stuff.
Choice there. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, what advice would you have for someone who is going through something similar, active duty, whether it be on the mental side or the physical side?
Well, that's a twofold question, and there's two different sets of advice for that, because if you're going through my back problem, then keep swinging away and be your best advocate and, you know, keep going back, man. Keep going back to the fight doc. If they keep saying no, you're wrong, well, they're not in your own skin. How the hell are they supposed to know? So that would be my best thing. And then don't leave room for gray area, because then that gives other people's minds the ability to interpret situations. And if you take that away, then it's just black and white and you're just trying to get better. Now for the mental health side, I guess we'll open up a little bit about me then. Well, I've had to know four of my friends who have committed suicide. I lost a friend to a sudden sickness, which no one has still told me what the hell happened to him. And then I had to respond to an emergency call where some 18-year-old girl hung herself in the barracks, and then her mom called the watchstanding phone and blew me up a million times, and then just, you know, tell me like, why didn't you respond faster, why didn't you do this, and she blamed me for her daughter's death. And that's shit I still like think about quite frequently, but at the same time, like, I'm not the dude in the car, you know, fucking trying to respond. And then at the same time, like, where was her roommate or where was her command? So, but that stuff I'm working through currently is because I still feel guilty about that phone call. Like, what if that had come in 5 minutes earlier? What if? But then once you start going down those what if pathways, that's a dangerous way to look at life, because you could apply that to literally every single shitty situation you've had. So I kind of lost my train of thought there. I guess for advice, yeah.
Yeah. What advice would you give for someone going through that?
Try and think about it in a different manner or talk to somebody about that. Do not internalize it. I did not tell a single soul besides like AO1 and, you know, how she is, like the awkward laugh. Oh, that's crazy. So I was like, all right, well, I'm on my own on this. But yeah, man, just talk to people. Like, I know that sounds really cliche or, I don't know, stupid. But if you keep shit in your head, dude, and it starts to, like, give life, it's going to just demolish you.
Yeah. And I think, too, something I want to add to that is, you know, you mentioned the response to you talking to someone. And I think that the military doesn't prepare leaders for conversations like that, for tough conversations where someone comes in and they go, hey, you know, I'm having a rough day today because so-and-so in our command just took his life, and people don't know what to do. A lot of times they joke about it. A lot of times they laugh about it. I think it's a coping mechanism. And I think it's like an awkward response of like, I don't know what to tell you right now. But you know, a lot of people just want to be heard. And I think just asking someone like, hey, are you okay? Do you need to talk to someone else? Like, if you're not in the position, and I'm talking to the listeners who maybe are still active duty or in leadership positions, and maybe someone's come to you and you don't know how to handle that person, you don't have to handle that conversation, but make sure that person's okay. And make sure that someone...
On top of that, though, and this is something that this is when you left, but something that I made sure that I did in LIMD, because, you know, there's a lot of fucked up people down there and there's a lot of depressed people down there. So you are entirely responsible for the way you conduct your conversation with them. because you don't know what they're going through. And the way you respond to a certain words, sentence, conversation, doesn't matter, could have a severe impact on them.
Yeah.
So I took it upon myself to really like slow down and just try and be sympathetic, I guess would be the way to term it. Or just like, even if I wasn't ready for that conversation, I would still just try and be kind.
Yeah.
I guess, because at the end of the day too, people need kindness in their lives.
Yeah. You never know what someone's going through. And let me tell you, if you're listening and you are not military, like, or have never been military, there is probably 10 different things on a daily basis that a lot of our active duty go through, between work shit, and the collateral duties. And when I really think back to like the amount of things that active duty does on a daily basis, between collaterals, regular job, the extra stuff that come on top of the regular job if you're at like an operational command. Mm-hmm. And then the home stuff where you're at, and then the home stuff where like actual home is. I mean, there is so much stuff. And that concept of just being kind and just listening to someone, or, you know, if you don't have the mental capacity to listen, make sure that that person's okay. And maybe they need to talk to a professional, or maybe they just need, you know, a friend, and, you know, they don't want the fear of losing a clearance or being hauled off to the ER, or, you know, someone just like doing the most, right? I think everything just comes back to listening and just being human. And I repeat this constantly on this podcast. Like, it's very simple. Listen, be a human. If you don't know what that is, learn. Like, there's resources out there. We live in the world of free information and technology. I mean, there's so many things. Sometimes you might have to go out on your own and learn it. And that's okay. That's where personal growth and being a better leader comes into play. But I appreciate you sharing that stuff. Because, you know, it's not always easy to talk about the people that we've lost and the things, the demons, or, you know, even if they're not demons, the things that we're still dealing with.
Yeah, I mean, I'll probably deal with it for a long time.
Yeah.
Especially because most of it happened during COVID too, which no one really talks about, but like going to a funeral and there's only about to be like fucking 6 people. So yeah, you're having to FaceTime a funeral, which is, in my mind, really fucked up.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah. And, you know, we still unfortunately continue to lose people. I mean, even on the veteran side. And I think that, I know for me, still impacts me too, because then, you know, it do start to internalize the like, oh, I should, it's really hard to keep up with people, a million people that you've met when you're in the military. But yeah. Well, I absolutely appreciate you coming on and just chit chatting and hanging out and sharing your story. And, to wrap this up, I'm just going to ask if there's any last words or advice that you want to share with the listeners.
Well, I was going to give some bad advice, but I don't think that's the type of podcast to do that. Well, you know, if you're still in the military, man, keep fighting, right? Like, that's all you can do at the end of the day, especially if you're struggling with something, just keep fighting. Because it will get better, you know, when you're not in an intensely stressful situation. And if you're alone, this is going to sound even dumber, but this is what helped me when I had really bad depression. Just go outside. Do not get cooped up in your house, your apartment, your barracks room, whatever. Because that's when you start, like we said, internalizing things, and that's when shit gets real.
Thank you for taking the time to listen in today. With your support, we are able to increase awareness of the mental health issues affecting service members and veterans today, with the goal of creating positive change. If you got value from this episode, please take 30 seconds to subscribe and share this episode within your own network. Until next time, remember, your story matters, your mental health matters, and your story doesn't end here.